Sanusha, very good morning to you. Welcome.
Good morning and thank you very much.
All right, so first up this morning, the Tonga tsunami and its after effects.
Yeah, I mean, that was a big trending story over the weekend. The tsunami that hit off the coast of Tonga in the Pacific Islands had caused a lot of damage in terms of communications, satellite, etc., all going out. But the bigger challenge was the ash that emerged from the volcanic eruption. And there were countries as far as the U.S., in particular cities like California, that were put on alert. People were asked not to go to the beach. And so now in the aftermath of that tsunami, the ash that has now settled on the infrastructure, on the roads, on any kind of space, has caused a lot of debris. And so Australia and New Zealand have been assisting to try and get in aid to the country. As much as the tsunami was felt off the Tonga Island, about 70 k's off the island, it did cause a lot of damage. Homes were destroyed. In fact, even a foreigner had lost their life in that tsunami. So what's really frightening right now is that we know that the El Nino effect is taking quite a big impact in terms of climate change and weather patterns that are becoming much more unpredictable, like we see in Ladysmith and stuff. But I think what the tsunami has done there is that it's opened up the space to say that we have to be careful now, because the unpredictability of the tsunamis and eruptions of volcanoes on the seabed is also propelled or shaped by the fact that there's drilling taking place. For example, there's drilling taking place to find new gas deposits on the seabed. They're building all kinds of underwater sea cables. And this is just now becoming a seriously frightening situation when it comes to climate change. And I think the instability of what we saw in Tonga and in the Pacific Islands, etc., makes us realize that we cannot continue this kind of approach to the kind of development we have. So the after effects of that tsunami has been quite frightening, in the sense that islands like Tonga, as well as others, Vanuatu and others, are very unstable on those fault lines, but they also have far-reaching effects across the Pacific and into other parts of the world.
Now, since we spoke last week, the Novak Djokovic saga ended in a double fault for the world number one. Many have been suggesting that there were no winners here. Djokovic has got himself banned for 3 years. He's earned the ire of many Australians, and he's come across as a person who did not want to take the vaccine and tried to, squeeze in through the back door. On the other hand, the Australian government has been called out for being inconsistent, and even Tennis Australia seems to have suffered as a result of all of this. But do you get a sense, Anusha, that people are now tired of the story and just want to move on?
Yeah, I think the players at the tournament had come out, particularly Nadal, have come out to say that they wanted to play tennis. I mean, that is what their job is, and that was the event. And so having this whole Djokovic saga shrouding the event itself, I think it's taken out the kind of excitement of the event. I mean, I myself haven't really went out to, I mean, you know, set up to watch any of the games. And I think that's a bit of the aftermath of the Djokovic dilemma or the saga, because at the end of the day, you want to actually watch the event. That's us on TV. But I think when you think about Djokovic versus the Australian government, anti-vaxxers versus vaccination, it also raises the question again about how much are we going to now see this as a kind of issue that becomes part of the politicization and the national interest of a country. When we ask people to take the vaccine, you know, are we infringing people's rights? Do we impose it on people? I mean, there's all kinds of things. But you're right in the sense that when we go to these sporting events now, it's going to be quite interesting to watch and to see. I mean, you know, For example, we've got the African Cup of Nations happening. I don't know whether anyone there has asked the question about, are you vaccinated? And so there's a challenge here now at the state level and in terms of global politics impacting on global sporting events, where you're going to end up in a situation that may actually raise questions about the national security interest and the national interest, and when do countries employ that in terms of how do you actually protect your border? But are you protecting your border? Are you actually looking at this and saying, well, here's an individual who we know has been very vocal about being an anti-vaxxer or vocal about his status, but then this is the person we go after. The other hand, on the other hand, Suleiman, is also the question of what does this do to an event like the Australian Open, where sponsors may now feel, we sponsor this event because people come here to watch the two big players, the world number one and the world number two. If this is the kind of things that are going to happen, how does that impact our advertising and our sponsoring? And then lastly, it's the crowds that come in to watch a Novak Djokovic versus a Rafa Nadal or something like that. My challenge is not necessarily that we should allow these things to happen because, you know, it's about the sporting event. But I think there are so many different implications that are going to start emerging around these questions.
Finally, then, the gig economy and the impact on workers who live in India.
Yeah, you know, the gig economy is quite fascinating because you've got your platform economy, your digital electronic economy, all kind of converging. Now, in India, what's interesting is that people are working longer hours. They're trying to basically find more jobs in terms of delivering, working online, or, you know, if you think about what makes up the gig economy, it's your drivers for fast food outlets delivering food and so forth. With the pandemic, I think, and with the fact that now you're going to go into a kind, I wouldn't say a post-pandemic world, but you're kind of getting to a point where the pandemic is, there's talk of it becoming an epidemic now. There's the question of how much of work is there out there. And what the pandemic has done is that it's changed the nature of work. In India, the problem is that people are doing more work for less pay. There's no traditional structure of a workplace. There's no traditional structure of an office. There's no hierarchy of executives or people that manage the system. And so it's kind of making it much more difficult, particularly where we know that the economies have been ravaged, have been negatively impacted by the pandemic, where people were forced into lockdown. And so now this gig economy has to rethink a lot of the ways in which they've been operating, not only in the context of, say, your gig economy in terms of delivering of food, etc. But people in India, younger people in India, will have to have a much more, a patient way in understanding that they're going to be waiting a longer time to get any kind of job in terms of waiting here and there. So it's a longer time period, and that just is going to cause more frustration. And there's also the question of whether there's a regulatory environment that regulates wages. Because in the gig economy, you kind of need to ask yourself, if you're an Uber driver or you are a pizza delivery guy, or you're part of the equivalent of Uber Eats or even Mr. Delivery in India, you're relying on tips as well. So this is going to be a bigger challenge for people in India because of the big population, but I think it's a challenge globally as well because the nature of work has now changed.
Sanusha, as always, thank you so much for your time and for the update. We really do appreciate it.
Thank you very much, and have a good week.